Handouts, same as last week. They're available there on the west table by the bulletins if you need one. Same sheet, yes. It's like a Bible that's wrinkled, it's well worn, right?
Have you seen his? It's duct tape.
That's right.
Mine's duct tape.
That's why God invented duct tape. So we can...
It holds it.
Exactly. All right, so we're in chapter 1 of Ecclesiastes. The bells again. So we got up through the first six verses in our discussion. We'll start at the middle of the back side of the handout. On the top it says, your life is not meaningless, reading verses 1 through 11. As you get to chapter 1 of Ecclesiastes, just a reminder of the key thoughts, two key thoughts to go with our objectives for our look at Ecclesiastes. The two thoughts are this: everything under the sun is in and of itself meaningless. And as we looked at, right, bottom line, life without God is meaningless. We just seem to go on and on and on. We do the same things. Routines become ruts. And we go, what's the point? But if we take a step back, even those routines and ruts do still serve a purpose. Again, if you think in a restaurant business, who's the one that gets all the glory in the restaurant business? The chef, right? But if they're, what does the chef need to really have that restaurant run?
A gas stove.
A gas stove. Exactly. And thus needs people to make sure that gas is supplied to that gas stove. And if the power gets cut off, that there's a generator in place to... What else does a chef need to make that... Yeah, other chefs.
Fresh food and a good staff.
Yeah, fresh food, right? So, I mean, the people who deliver the food needs to make sure it gets there. You know, the staff, right? If you don't have a welcoming host, you may not be as inclined to go back. If the servers aren't doing their job, or if they don't have servers. I mean, everybody has a role. And if someone, you know, is in charge of doing the dishes, if they're not getting dishes clean, I mean, you could have a chef with great food, but if you got somebody else's food on your plate, you're probably not going to want to eat it and go back. Right? So even so, the point of that is we may think our role is mundane or insignificant, but without your insignificant role, things couldn't function, which then makes your role significant. So whatever your role is, right? I mean, sometimes who else who has a very important role might think their role is insignificant?
A mother,
right? You know, so again, if moms don't carry out their role, even though they don't get all the appreciation that they should, what happens, right? You know, parenthood in general. And so everybody has a role to play. No one is really insignificant. Who makes it seem insignificant outside of ourselves? Our old Adam. Right, the world. Right, the world, well, you know, we're into titles and what do you make and what do you do and this and that. Do you ever have a conversation with somebody and they ask, hey, what do you do for a living? And you tell them and they go, oh. You know, yeah, once they've, that's why someone said, just tell them you're in public speaking. Which I am. Well, what do you speak about? People like you. No. That's right. Sales and service. Yeah, that's true. Yeah. So we have to be careful too, as the world may look at us as maybe insignificant, that we're not like Christianity. How many of the people in the world think Christianity, you as a Christian, are insignificant? But really, Christians have always played a significant role, right, and still do. And so our definition of significance can't come from the world, because the world's definition of significance comes and goes. And they're looking at the wrong thing. Our definition has to come from God. First Peter, right? You are a chosen people, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, a people belonging to God, that you may declare the praises of him who called you out of darkness into his wonderful light. Once you were not a people, but now you are the people of God, right? You are somebody significant. So those are the, you know, one of the key thoughts. Everything under the sun is in of itself meaningless. As we said, there are no U-Hauls behind hearses. You can't take it with you. God has given it to us to use now. The role of God in our life is the second key thought. The role of God in our life. And that's what Solomon, as we'll see, especially as we get it further in now to chapter 1 and chapter 2, he tried to live life without God. So that's why he's a good author for this, that God put in place, because he struggled with the meaninglessness of life, and he tried to live life without God, and it didn't work out well. Those two key objectives that go with those goals and key thoughts. First one objective, help avoid common traps found in society. All right, these are things that we talked about last week. And then the second objective is help travel through life with Christ at the wheel. So those two objectives tie closely together with the two key thoughts. Life in and of itself is meaningless, the role of God in our life. That leads then to chapter 1. Let's read again verses 7 to 11. Let's just read it all. So let's take 1 through 6 first of all. 1 through 6, someone please. Lisa. All right.
What else? Gives life, evidence that life is seed that grows up, it dies, and then you harvest it, and it starts over again.
That's right.
Death.
Death, okay? And again, if we don't die, then we don't rise, right? So again, we have evidence all around us of what he's saying here, the idea of nothing permanent. And yet, how often do we kind of get into that trap of thinking this is permanent? And so, you know, let's put down some permanent roots. But by having that kind of mentality, we can miss out on so much of opportunities that God puts before us. So again, routines are not bad, but routines can fall into ruts. And so we want to have a routine while not falling into a rut. And there's a common cycle there, the root. Are we going to continually fall into ruts even though we try to avoid them?
Yes.
Sure, right? So instead of beating yourself up, you just recognize, okay, this is kind of that cycle of life. I need to be aware of it. And just keep moving forward, right? Like Paul said, how much of our life do we spend looking behind, thinking about and pondering what already has passed, and not spending enough time what's present moving forward? Alright? You know, how often does life seem like it's going slow? Then you take a step back and you go, wow, that was quick. Someone once said, right, if sand goes through an hourglass, so goes the days of our life. It's not a soap opera, but...
You
watch
that,
too. You know, as a child, my mom made me watch some things that... Right? So I think of the John 15 concepts with these words, too. How important it is then to stay connected to Jesus the Vine. We are the branches, he is the vine. If you stay connected to him, you will bear much fruit. Apart from him, you can do nothing. Apart from him, we'll lose the objectives of life, the meaning of life. And the importance then of staying connected, emphasized in the words of Psalm 1. Right? Meditating upon the word of the Lord day and night, being like that tree planted by streams of water. Ideally, unlike California trees, the roots stay deeper. So we want to have deep roots in the storms of life. Look at verses 8 and following, right? When dealing with the routines of life, what can happen? Again, as you say,
wearisome.
In what way?
It's just all the same.
Yeah, again, it can seem all the same.
How much excitement do most of us have in our lives? It's more routine. Get up in the morning, get ready, go to work, come home, eat, get ready, and it goes over and over. There's nothing wrong, but that is, it can be worrisome. I mean, you know, we're not out there going for excitement.
Right?
It's not always wrapped up to be either excitement. It can be very negative as well.
Well, it can be, right? That's kind of a common trap. Again, some of that is like Solomon says too later on, like accepting your lot. But it doesn't mean you have to be discontent. But understand where you're at.
Pastor Waters told me once the best things in life are boring.
He's right. Yeah, you know, putting the commandments into practice may not seem like the greatest thing, but like John says, love for God, to follow his commands are not burdensome. Right? What seems exciting, right? How many people fall into the traps of the exciting life and then what comes with that? Or, you know what, they have a little too much, and then, you know, they find on Facebook a picture of them dancing on the table. You know, was that really exciting in the big picture of things? Is that really what you want to be remembered for?
I can't get on the table.
Okay. So part of that is we're not going to find contentment, we're not going to find satisfaction in things of this world. At times, this world can be wearisome. And that, what's at the heart of that? What's the reason why?
Sin,
right? I mean, because of sin, life becomes wearisome. Trouble, what did God tell Adam and Eve? You know, not by the sweat of your brow, you're going to have to work the fields and so forth. What could have been a joy for you is not. But there are farmers, for example, who do find joy in their work. How so? or anybody. Whatever your job is, how do you find joy in your work?
You see the rewards of hard work.
Okay, the rewards of hard work.
Sense of purpose.
Sense of purpose. Yeah.
Serving others.
Serving others, right? I mean, your attitude is key. If you send that admonition, or if you think God is holding back, think again. And how many opportunities, again, do we miss because we're always thinking of what I'm missing, or it could be more exciting or whatever. Like you said, give thanks for the boring at times. But it really kind of boils down to attitude, right? God has given us an attitude of joy. What does Paul say? Rejoice in the Lord always. Life really isn't boring. You know, if we, we'll get to that, but Romans 11, if we think about it, life really is exciting. I mean, think of the creation and the beauty and all the things that get discovered in creation. That's exciting. You know, people have said too, I mean, we get spoiled with the views that we have here in Northern California. I mean, do you still appreciate the views that you have? I mean, you stand on top of the, outside the admin building and you look, you know, past the mall. Never get tired of that view. And then you can see the snow up there, and you see better them than us. You know? I mean, so you can see it, and you can enjoy it. And so again, life, in a way, is exciting. What's your attitude toward it? I mean, even raising kids. Yeah, it's hard work, but it's also exciting. I mean, when you take a step back. Worship. Ah. Yeah. But again, take a step back. It's exciting, right, to worship God and the fellow believers. So attitude is important. And think of, as parents, too, and all of us, but, you know, parents, your attitude toward your children, where do they get their attitude from more often than not? If you're looking at life as boring and monotonous and worthless, what's the point? Your kids are going to be, and then that cycle just continues. God has given us an opportunity to break the cycle. Right? All right, so when dealing with the routines of life, something to keep in mind, that there's nothing new under the sun. Lamentations 3, 22 and 23. Okay?
Because of the Lord's great love, we are not consumed, for his compassion never fails. They are new every morning. Great is your
faithfulness. Okay. So it may seem like there is nothing new, and yet what does the Lord say? His mercies are new every morning. But they're really not. I mean, it's the same mercy, but it seems fresh and new each and every day. So again, that goes into that attitude. Every day the Lord injects us with a fresh attitude. An opportunity to see his hand in our life. He never fails, right? His faithfulness. Key words, beautiful words there. And again, this is Jeremiah's lament over Judah's situation. Matthew 11, 28. In context of nothing new.
What? Come to me, all you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest.
Okay? And the rest is the forgiveness of sins. Right? Rest in him. How many people need their rest but don't see it? And so they're missing out on that rest. They're like the mouse on the wheel, just spinning, and not gaining traction. Because they're missing the rest. And notice that rest is for those who are weary and burdened. Right? Who's not weary and burdened at times from the things of life? The challenges. The Lord recognizes there are challenges in life, physical, mental, and also spiritual. And so he doesn't just say, tough, deal with it, suck it up, rub some dirt on it. No, he says, come to me, and I'll give you the rest that I have to offer. John 10, verse 10. Steve.
The thief comes only to steal and kill and destroy. I have come that they may have life and have it to the full.
Okay, how does that fit into the context of Solomon's words?
He provides all you need. Life in it as the devil has come to steal your joy and peace and destroy you. He's come to give you that peace and happiness.
Okay, so Solomon recognizes that.
I think when your focus is on Christ instead of on the world, then gratitude jumps to the forefront.
Sure.
And you're grateful for everything. Everything you have, from the littlest to the largest.
Right. So, yeah, gratefulness is key, right? With Christ, that's what Solomon is getting at. Like you said, it seems like he's being pessimistic with his words and the way he is because he's looking at life without God. That's what it's like. But now, life with God, it really is fresh and new. Even though there's nothing new to the sun, it seems like it is new. And so, like you said, an attitude of thanksgiving, what Paul said, right? In that same context of rejoicing over always. With prayer and petition, with thanksgiving, present your requests to God. Yep.
I was going to say, a grateful heart never gets tired of the same sunset day after day.
Right.
Every day there's something different and beautiful.
Yeah, attitude again helps us look at that sunset day after day with excitement and joy and thanksgiving.
Our whole life is based on rhythm, so we say, it's a humdrum, same old thing. But our bodies have certain rhythm called circadian rhythms. God set up weeks, 7 days. We always have Sunday or Friday first, that's different day of the week, and then Sunday's coming, and then he set up festivals for certain parts of the year. So it's routine, but we always have things to pray. Christmas, Thanksgiving, Easter. There's always something to put in there.
Right.
Until they get rid of Christmas and Easter.
God gives us hope and focus, right? So our life is designed to be in rhythms, right? And it can be stretched here and there, but again, what happens when you don't get enough sleep? Or what happens when you don't get enough exercise or so forth? Right, there is a rhythm. But then for our spirituality and the church, right, we have the festivals to look forward to. And it's not just one other festival, but goes with the festival, the meaning. So the hope and the focus long term. So again, God created us to work, to be active, to get rest. I mean, Jesus himself in flesh found time for private meditation, found time for rest. So again, the routine is a good thing. And when we push it too far, it does catch up to us. And then it impacts our attitude. So it all goes together. And that's what Solomon's going to be continually driving at. How do we view where we have come from? How do we view what we're to do with what we have been given? If it's without God, it's going to seem meek from us. But with God, even the mundane has meaning.
They've done studies in trying to change people's daily rhythm, when you get up in the morning and how their body functions according to what our times are and stuff. Anyhow, they put people in situations where there's no outside stimulus, no day or night, trying to change their circadian rhythm. And most they could move it is about 2 hours.
Okay. Yeah, trying to change people's rhythm makes you think of isolation, right? You can put in isolation to break you. Also shows that we're meant to not be isolated. We're meant to be social creatures. God designed us to be. And we have recent evidence how that doesn't work. But yeah, just a reminder, again, think in your own life, how the world, in a sense, is like a thief, trying to rob you of the meaning and purpose that God has for you, not just you specifically, but also in life in general. We can come up with multiple thieves. So they may not be the same for each and every one of us, but the solution is the same.
I was wondering if a chap was in the submarines. Even if you would come under water, you wouldn't see, the day for, months at a time. You don't know what time of the day it was. I was told it was by the condiments breakfast on the table. You know, they told me that was, oh, that's dinner, that's breakfast, you know. Yes, it was routine, but you can lose some rhythm in there too. That can be, you know, good and bad.
Right. He's staying quiet. All right, find the scriptures. What main truth do we see in this first chapter so far? Nothing new.
Without God, everything is meaningless. Meaningless.
Yeah, right? Worldly wisdom is meaningless without God, how it applies. Life without God, we don't see the value of life. And so that's where abortion comes in, and euthanasia, and murder in itself. Again, the more society goes without God, the more such things become not only spoken, but popular and acted on. And when we talk about being realistic and talking about attitude and so forth, is Paul advocating for a pie-in-the-sky mentality? No, he said they're in the clouds. I mean, that's not what he's advocating. You know, everything's hunky-dory. With God, there's still going to be challenges, but with God, you can see the purpose of those challenges, or at least have the endurance to get through those challenges. You know, again, rejoice the Lord always, and say it again, rejoice. You may not be happy in your current situation for one reason or another. So again, Solomon being realistic on both sides of the coin. How does this apply then to us as members of God's family?
Don't wish for wisdom.
Don't wish for wisdom. He gets to that later on, right? Careful what you ask for.
Most of us are never going to make an impact over the whole of society in our lives. Yet each little increment we do to help people makes a big difference. So you have to look at it in a different way than, oh, I'm going to be, you know, well-known hero. You've got to be small, grain of sand on there. But without that rain, each rain makes the beach so much easier.
Yeah, you may not make the messenger, you know, or you may not, you know, make Facebook or whatever it is, social media, may not catch on to what you're doing. But God knows. And you may not even get words of praise and thanks from the people you're helping. You mean your coworkers. Again, you doing your job is helping your coworkers do their job. And finally, that's what we're here to do. To build up one another, even if they recognize it or not. And in various capacities, we have the opportunity to do that. So again, God help us recognize what our pitfalls in life, and in particular our own life. God keep us connected to Him, which He enables us to do by being in His Word. Some of the pitfalls can be even individuals or even businesses or churches can get caught up in that, right? What's the latest and greatest status? You know, then we need to, you know, for a while there, pastors wearing skinny jeans. That was the thing. You know, now it's pastors don't wear those skinny jeans anymore. What are you relying on? Yeah, you're relying on yourself and not on the Word. That's where it needs to be. So again, as individuals and also then as a family believer, there are pitfalls we need to watch out for. And sometimes, again, we may think, well, what's the point? But we gather together to be encouraged and encourage one another. And we're carrying out what God has called us to do. Explain to someone the phrase, nothing new under the sun, when they argue we are coming up with new inventions all the time as we get further from the Stone Age.
They were always there, we're just finding them.
Yeah, like, can you give some examples?
No.
Well, you know, let me see. Great example, right? And who programs the machine? And the one who's doing the programming, is that really the one that we want programming those machines, Michael?
Going back a little recent.
Yeah, recognizing all good and perfect things come from God. I mean, he's given us the ability to put things into play. You know, we like to think again that people who lived before us were all backwards, you know, and not with it. But without the things that they have done, we would not be where we're at. You know, all those advances started before us. You know, whether it be from making the square wheel round and then so forth. Cell phones. You know, they even put a cell phone together. I mean, maybe they didn't have cell phones back in the day, and yet the materials to make those cell phones have always been there. Or the ability to put different plants together to get another plant. I mean, it's really nothing new under the sun. It was all there. We're just being exposed to what has been there. So yeah, it's great points. I mean, so we need to help people recognize it's always there. Even when you get into sin. Sin is sin. It may have different names. It may have different forms, but the root of sin has always been there. Same with the solution. You know, it's said that the average speed today on the LA freeways is about that of a horse and a buggy. Yeah, the more things change, the more they stay the same. I mean, we think it'd be, but, you know, you've probably been caught up in that. That's a good lesson again, as Luis and Michael point out, for our children. We're always building up what was there before. So an appreciation factor. Because sometimes they can lose that too. People communicated better than people necessarily communicate today because, you know, we're looking down like this rather than looking at the person. Why in general do we get stressed over small details or about our life and or our work?
So blessed, we don't have big things to worry about.
All right, we're so blessed. Yeah, we miss the bigger picture.
We don't have bigger things to worry about.
Okay. So what's at the heart of we forgetting the promises of God and that we have life and have it to the full? What's the pitfall that leads to that? Paul talked about it in Philippians.
The devil made me our old Adam sit there. We're more important than this. We should be getting. We're always getting too much self-centered.
Okay, that whole self-centeredness, the discontentment, right? The jealousy that falls in there. So again, helping us recognize the pitfalls, and that we get so caught up in the small things. If God took care of the greatest thing of all time that we have, how much more will He take care of the other things too? Right, that's the whole context of Matthew 6. God knows we're going to worry, so that's why He emphasizes those words in other places in Scripture about what to do when we worry. It goes back, nothing new under the sun there too, right? Because God did the same thing with Adam and Eve. Well, why did He hold this tree back from you? And I didn't really, you know, so again, we get caught up in that. Well, what am I missing?
Well, I was going to say that, I mean, if we're looking at the world as a way to satisfy any of our desires, or it's going to distract us. It's going to keep us going with the Word of God. And everything the world offers leads the opposite direction, the direction we need to go.
Right.
And the only way we can handle all these distractions is from a perspective of God. So how do we get to know God? Through His Word. And when the Word is instilled in us, then we can deal with anything that comes forward.
Right.
You know, and we can deal with it in a manner that is God-pleasing, not in a manner that's world-pleasing.
Right, so while God has given us the things of this world for our pleasure and enjoyment and use, they have to be worshipped. But too often in the world, we end up worshiping what God has given to us to glorify Him. And so, and that's the lessons we need to keep on passing on to the next generation. The importance of the Word, Psalm 1 again, meditate on the Word of the Lord. So what example are we setting, you know, when it comes to our devotion to the Lord? Solomon's going to nail that point in chapter 2, we were just saying. How can we come to grips, cope, handle our current situations in life? Really nothing new to answer there. John 15 again, I am the vine, stay connected. Philippians 4, be content with where we're at. Learn to be grounded, find satisfaction where we're at. That doesn't mean we can't improve, but that if we have this mentality that we're always missing something, you know, then that's just going to keep eating away at us. But find satisfaction where we're at. Now, why do we tend to make mountains out of molehills? Is it because? Which one of those would you go with? Anyone start a conversation? Are you my nature? What was it? Oh, okay. All right.
Because we have husbands.
Okay. We'll keep us grounded. Yeah, again, as alluded to earlier, something we're so blessed that we do miss the bigger picture of the blessings from the small to the medium to the big size blessings. But we're always looking for the biggest, right? And so again, we miss what's really right before us, which goes to that contentment. The answer is varied, right? It's just an opportunity for self-reflection, really for yourself. What is it that is kind of a pitfall for you? And so then, Lord, help me recognize that pitfall. To not get caught up in it, and when I do, you'll lift me back up again. And help me stay connected. The Bible was written so long ago, how can it be seen as something valuable and meaningful still today? Nothing new under the sun. Exactly. Right? It still hits home. Like Hebrews, the Word is living and active. It still cuts people to the core. And it still can lift them up. And so we emphasize, too, oftentimes in outreach opportunities, we have an unchanging message for a changing world. And yet the world doesn't change, really. Some parts of it do, I mean, the correct understanding. But just it's a reminder that our message doesn't change even though the world keeps on going. You know, people come and go, and sin can come and go. But at the heart of it, people who have been there, sin has been there since the fall into sin. And we still have the same solid message to do that. Which is important for us as a church because, again, how many churches unfortunately have changed the message? And so sometimes we look at, well, that church is growing. Well, why? And more often than not, how are they growing?
Changing the Word.
Yeah, changing the Word. But then when you really pull back the layers, it's not a solid growth. Because again, people have this natural knowledge of God. We know we need to be connected to a higher power. And so we're searching for connections to that higher power. Right? But you can't change the message. Same problem, same solution. All right, new handout, chapter 2. looking at verse 12 and following, 12 to 18, Ephesians chapter 1. Let's look at that. 12 to 18. Great.
I, the teacher, was king over Israel and Jerusalem. I devoted myself to study and to explore by wisdom all that is done under heaven. What a heavy burden God has laid on men. I have seen all the things that are done under the sun. All of them are meaningless, a chasing after the wind. What is twisted cannot be straight. What is lacking cannot be humbled. I thought to myself, look, I have grown and increased in wisdom more than anyone who has ruled over Jerusalem before me. I have experienced much of the wisdom and knowledge. Then I applied myself to the understanding of wisdom and also of madness and folly. But I learned that this too is a chasing after the wind. For with much wisdom comes much sorrow, more knowledge and more grief.
Okay, so again, as we've noted, the more things change, the more they stay the same, and that can work both ways. As people come and go, work comes and goes, but God remains the same. For more on Solomon's reign, you can look at 1 Kings chapter 2 through 11. I won't do that now. But again, a 40-year reign following David's 40-year reign. Definitely prosperous, a kingdom that was built up, well known throughout the world, financial, trade. Life was good, right? What? The description of silver. Silver was like water, you know what I mean? Gold was king. What was it that made Solomon famous? We know, right? Wisdom, extraordinary wisdom. Now let's look at 1 Kings 4, verses 29 to 34, as an example of his wisdom. 29 to 34. Paul?
God gave Solomon wisdom, and very great insight, and a breadth of understanding as measureless as the sand on the seashore. Solomon's wisdom was greater than the wisdom of all the people of the East, and greater than all the wisdom of Egypt. He was wiser than anyone else, including Ethan and Ezra, wiser than Heman, Calcol, and Darda, the son of Mohol, and has fame spread to all the understanding under surrounding nations. He spoke 3,000 proverbs, and his songs numbered 1,005. He spoke about plant life, from the cedar of Lebanon to the hyssop that grows out of the walls. He also spoke about animals and birds, reptiles and fish. From all the nations, people came to listen to Solomon's wisdom, sent by all the kings of the world who had heard of his wisdom.
Okay, so how would you describe his wisdom?
Unmatched.
Unmatched, right? As measureless as the sand on the seashore, right? Wise in all subject matters, plants, animals, you name it. With all that wisdom, Solomon says in 13, again, I devoted myself to study, to explore my wisdom, and then he says, what a heavy burden God has laid on men. What does he mean by that?
Michael? I guess Mr. was correct. I guess we just taking it back all the wisdom we had and maybe retrospect. Became more humble and realized. What did I do with all that? Was it good? I guess trying to put words, I guess he was very humble and by your enthusiasm realized how all this did. Was it good? Was it bad? Was it ugly? Was it all vain? Right
thing
sometimes.
Okay, so Solomon.
Retrospect what he did.
Yeah, so Solomon realizes a proper perspective in life, which then causes him to be humble as he realizes, yeah, life is not all about just excitement and it it's not full of meaning without God, because we get caught up in our routines, as we said. While we go to work, day after day after day, and we change diapers day after day after day, and do all this, for what purpose? Again, we're even in worship, right? We go to worship week after week after week. Well, what's the point? Again, you're being fed, you're also encouraging others by your presence there. So there is always a positive point, again, to that work, to the diaper changing, especially for those around you, you can smell it, and then, you know, coming to church each week, right?
It seems like Solomon felt the responsibility because God had gifted him with such wisdom, and that responsibility was to fix everything, solve all the problems. That can be a huge burden.
Sure. Right, and that, so that burden that he put upon himself, you know, God didn't give him wisdom so that he could solve all the problems, but he recognized Solomon, you know, started out with heart in the right place. And so he asked for wisdom. Lord, this is a daunting task to rule your people. Give me wisdom to do it. And so he did. And then also became a pitfall. So again, what has God given to us that really is meant to be a blessing, but we have turned it into a pitfall, but he can still use it as a blessing.
Also, humankind is under the burden of sin.
Right? So we're always under that burden of sin and the consequences that come with it. And so one of the consequences can be looking at life as just meaningless. And so that's a reminder that this is a burden to have to think that way. Now let's reverse that thinking.
Yeah. What God has done for us that he didn't do for Solomon, I think, is he made us saints and sinners at the same time, which means he's given us sainthood. Solomon was wise, but earthly. Mm-hmm. He was wise on all the animals he knew about. You can ask him any question about the earth, about anything surrounding him. He had the answers, no question. But he didn't have the answer to what he didn't have the answer to sin. He didn't know how to deal with it. He tried to, I think.
He did have the answer to sin, though, right? I mean, because his father David taught him that answer. Right? And his father David set an example of, you're going to build this temple and why. What happened, which happens to any of us, especially as we get wise in the ways of the world, is we fall away from it.
Right.
And that's what Solomon did. He fell away from it. And that's why people will sometimes still wonder if Solomon really came back. You know, there's evidence that Solomon, by writing this, realized he had fallen and fallen hard, but God gave him an opportunity to come back. And so it's a good reminder for us, too, is as we get educated in the world and we set up our careers and so forth, how easily we can get caught up in that education and in that career, that pretty soon we start thinking, I don't need God. And then pretty soon that career and so forth becomes meaningless to a point. And what's the difference? Because I've lost my God connection and purpose behind it. And education today, right? I mean, education today is really a from little on. I mean, from little on, when our children are learning, outside of the home, and maybe then even within the home, as some parents disagree, it's definitely pulling away from God. I mean, were you, when your children were growing up, who are grown up now, were you as concerned about what they were hearing in elementary and in high school? In the university setting. You know, it was already started in the university setting, right? Now it's filtered down to the high school, now it's filtered down to the elementary, even filtered down to preschools. And so from little on, those children are being inundated with the wisdom and the folly of the world. And if they're not getting a steady diet of God's word, it's an intermittent, pretty soon what's going to win? And then Solomon makes a case for that too, because look at him. He grew up in a Christian family, let's say, and yet the world got the best of him.
Yeah, that's what I was trying to say, is that, you know, we do the same thing as Solomon. We take the gifts given us and we deal with the sin side and not the saint side.
Right.
Much more.
Sure.
And we have this other side that we have at our total disposal, right, and we don't use it.
Right.
And Solomon had it too. and he ignored it.
Right. And that's so the importance of drowning that whole night of daily meditation repentance.
If you look at the Buddhist over there, always seeking wisdom. And you know, there are monks that go around doing nothing but seeking wisdom. How fruitless can it be?
Yeah.
You know, and where are they going to get that wisdom? You know, but that's.
Scientology, the same thing, too. You're always seeking that greater wisdom and then gotta rewrite the book and pay some more.
Connecting with him, I used to study Buddhism, and I got to that point where I thought, what's the payoff? You become enlightened, and then I'm not sure what happens. And so it really was weird. Anyhow, what I
would
say is, should Solomon have asked for something different
than wisdom? No, should he ask for something different than wisdom? His motive for asking for wisdom was pure. I mean, Lord, these are your people. Who am I to govern your people? Lord, give you the wisdom to do it. And the Lord looked favorably on his request. And so, same with us too. The Lord gives us blessings upon blessings that some we don't even ask for. And that's to Paul's point then, what do we do with those blessings? And so that's Solomon's really bigger picture. How susceptible each and every one of us are to falling away from, by the grace of God, go away. And then one of the pitfalls can be is, you know, again, looking at my life is meaningless. Why do you think that is? And realize the only one whose opinion that matters in the end is God's. And he has given you a meaningful life. Centered in Christ, and then everything else is just the gravy. But that's the battle, that's the struggle. As long as we're in the sight of heaven, day after day, we're going to have to go back and forth with that.
Could he have asked for salvation?
Well, he had it already.
Did he?
At the time he asked. At the time he asked. He's younger. I mean,
probably was pretty long ago.
Twenties. Sure. And we'll get into it because there were some challenges to his being king, and we'll get into that next time. So again, just to close out verse 14, right? He's seen all this that's taking place under the sun, and again, like without God, it's all meaningless. It's just simply a chasing after the wind. Like you said with the Buddhism, you can't catch it. If you're chasing life to accomplish whatever it is you're trying to accomplish, if it's not without God, it's just like chasing after the wind. You learn to get it. So contentment is key. Blessings on your contentment and recognizing the pitfalls and